Conestoga Podcast, program number 30 for Tuesday, July 17th, 2007. Days to go, folks. Just 3 days and another Conestoga is upon us. This is the final podcast before Conestoga 11, and in it I will be talking to our game czar, Greg Turner. But up first are some highlights for Conestoga 11 and details on the 1632 Minicon. Now, I do want to remind our listeners there is a programming grid available on the Conestoga website. Go to the home page and click on Program Grid just below the list of main guests. You'll receive a printed version of the pocket program at registration along with the programming book. Now for some highlights from the convention. Now, there are a tremendous number of things that are going to be happening at the convention here, but I just want to list a few of the highlights that are coming up. First up, of course, is the art auction. And always a don't-miss event capping our wonderful art show. It's Saturday evening at 7 p.m. And on Friday night, I'm going to be skipping around a bit here, on Friday night is the Yard Dog Party, which will be in the con suite. Yard Dog Press will be sponsoring the con suite for that evening, and it starts at Friday at 9:30 p.m. Another Yard Dog event is the Merlin Show, which is a Yard Dog Press production. It's the end of the world as we know it, but that doesn't mean there can't be TV. Come and see the filming of the first ever Merlin Show. It's just like the Martha Stewart Show used to be if she lived in a trailer park, had big hair, and built all her crafts with beer cans and spam. Who wrote this? Oh, anyway. But brought to you by Yard Dog Press and the Bubbas of the Apocalypse. That's Saturday at 4:30 p.m. And, of course, our perennial favorite, which we've had for a number of years, was the Royal Gauntlet Educational Birds of Prey. They have been wonderful, and we are very pleased to have them back. They are licensed by the state of Oklahoma to provide care and rehabilitation for sick and injured birds. Headed by founder Bob Annenson, the center's mission is to return animals back to the wild. Annenson and his colorful crew bring along their teaching birds of prey, which make for an amazing educational experience in the ancient art of falconry. And this is Saturday starting at 11 a.m. And next up is the Sifwa Musketeers demonstration. If you listened to our last podcast, you got to hear Elizabeth Moon talk about how the Sifwa Musketeers formed so they had an opportunity to fence at conventions and also raise money for the Sifwa Emergency Medical Fund for the Science Fiction Writers of America. If you can't get enough of live steel, the Twisted Blades will be also performing and demonstrating at the convention. Now, the Twisted Blades are the School of Stage Combat Sword Fighting Act dedicated to providing education through entertainment, fun shows, and great sword fighting for all ages. The School of Stage Combat has done work in film, theater, opera, ballet, historical reenactments, and shows of all kinds. Their students have been accepted as performers for Disney World and have gone off to become fight directors, film directors, and performers. And this will be Sunday at 11 a.m. Another Sunday event, which I'm kind of skipping around here, but that's okay. You'll figure it all out when you see the program book, is the Story Illustration Workshop. Interested in the process of illustrating a story from the blank page to finished project, John Picasso, our artist guest of honor, and David Lee Anderson lead this hands-on workshop. The story and drawing materials will be provided. This is going to be a Sunday at 10 a.m. And of course, this is the fifth year of the Conestoga International Film Festival. They have a full lineup, and you'll just have to see these films. Anyway, it starts at Saturday at 9. Next up is our charity this year, which is Safari Sanctuary, and they will be hosting an auction for them. All the proceeds from this auction will be donated to the Safari Sanctuary. Now, Safari is a nonprofit 501c3 wildlife refuge with two missions, rescue and education. Safari takes in and gives permanent refuge to exotic wildlife of all kind, currently housing around 200 animals. Safari also strives to educate our youth on the dangers of having exotic pets. And the auction starts at Sunday at 10 a.m. And of course, Saturday night, what would Conestoga be without the play? Now, before the play, we have a short masquerade, and the costumes are always entertaining, but I think what everyone likes to see is the play. Now, the title this year, which I mentioned last time, was Lost Heroes of Battlestar Galactica. Conceived as halftime entertainment, while judges awarded prizes for the masquerade, The play has metastasized. It has consumed hecklers, folks with real talent, and anyone who comes close enough to touch. So be part of the mystique. Just don't expect it to start on time. Plan to start around Saturday around 9-ish. And then on Sunday at 10 a.m. is the Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense Workshop. Now, Suzette Hayden-Elgin, PhD, is a specialist in applied psycholinguistics, is the author of the best-selling Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense series, which now includes 10 books and 4 audio programs. Books include How to Disagree Without Being Disagreeable, You Can't Say That to Me, and The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense, which has sold nearly 1.2 million copies. Dr. Elgin leads participants through this wonderful system for dealing with bullies without becoming one. Now, it's Sunday at 10 a.m. Now, for those of you who are fans of Suzette Hayden-Elgin, there's also a breakfast that morning starting at 8:30 a.m. So if you want to attend, please get up early. Jumping back to Friday night, is the Harry Potter release party. Starts at Friday at 11 p.m. Now, I want to talk about the 1632 Mini-Con. First of all, what is 1632? What is a Mini-Con, and what are they doing in Tulsa? And I will read short description from one of the 1632 participants, Rick Boatwright. In April of the year 2000, a six-mile sphere centered on Grantville, West Virginia, was displaced in space and time to Germany in May 1631. The inhabitants of Grantville decided to start the American Revolution early. The nobility of Europe were not amused. This story by Eric Flint is the basis for a great deal of lively discussion on Bane's Bar on the Bane's Book website since 1999. Now, the 1632 universe has spawned sequels, including 2 anthologies, Ring of Fire and Ring of Fire 2, 7 novels, 1633, 1634, The Galileo Affair, 1634, The Ram Rebellion, 1635, The Canon Law, 1635, The Baltic War, 1635, The Bavarian Crisis, and continuing issues of the 1632 Universe magazine, the Grantville Gazette, both as electronic and print editions. More books and magazines are scheduled soon. The discussion on Bane's Bar, which is bar.bane.com, that's bar.bane.com, has so far involved over 500,000 posts by over 1,000 participants in the 1632 conferences. But wait, there's more. An encyclopedic website, 1632.org, search engines dedicated to the series, a list of every uptimer who came through the ring or the grid, the nonfiction articles, SF stories set within the SF story, and more. But wait, there was something missing. They never got to see each other. So the desire led to a series of mini-conventions, mini-cons, held at the real town the Ring of Fire was based on, Mannington, West Virginia. But rural West Virginia isn't the easiest place to get to, nor are the hotels that great. And many of them had done Mannington. It is a very small town. Additionally, in 2007, the Grantville Gazette moved from semi-pro intermittent publication to pro rates and scheduled publication. The 1632 editorial board and Eric decided it was time to reach out to the larger SF community. Why Tulsa? The editor of the Gazette and 3 of the series authors live in Oklahoma. 2 series authors are on the Conestoga Con Committee, and Eric's been guest of honor at Conestoga. And other editorial board members live in neighboring states. Anyway, as Spock said at the time, it seemed the logical thing to do. Come join the fun as Eric Flint, the authors of the Gazette, and the denizens of Bane's Bar discuss their continuing plans while they're in Tulsa. There are 3.5 million words of the 1632 series in print. Some of them could be yours. It's time for the interview. Gaming has been an integral part of Conestoga since its inception. Over the years, we have had a number of people who have run the games for us. We are blessed to have Greg Turner, who has run the games for the last 2 years, and this will be his 3rd. Greg was able to take some time from his busy schedule to sit down with me. After the interview, I'll be listing some of the games confirmed for Conestoga 11, and now for my interview with The Game Czar. Welcome to the Conestoga Podcast. This is Chris Merle, your podcast host, and I'd like to welcome our self-proclaimed game czar, Greg Turner, to the Conestoga Podcast. Greg is a longtime gamer and a fan who has taken over the thankless task of running the games at Conestoga. Greg also participates in the ever-popular play put on by the amazing Penguin Playhouse Players. Welcome, Greg.
Hello, Chris.
And we will talk about the play a little bit later on. But what was the name of the play last year? Was it A Night at the Space Opera?
Yeah, I think Randy came up with that. But yeah, running games is hardly thankless. I walk into the con committee meetings and they're like, oh, you're here. It's like I get praise for just showing up. It's wonderful.
Well, we really do appreciate the hard work that you do for this, Greg. What year did you take over gaming? Do you remember?
This will be my third year.
This will be your third year. Okay, excellent. Yeah, I have this wonderful question for which I'm going to ask here in a few seconds. But so you've been doing the gaming for about 3 years now, and that's wonderful. Now, the question I have here for you, I had to write this down.
Okay.
Is what possessed you to become the game chair, or as you call yourself, the game czar? Was it a sense of duty, to be loyal to your local convention? Was it because you wanted to do things right out of a sense of fair play? Or was it some sadistic mean streak as the game master, as a game master coming out?
Okay. It's kind of sad, really. If you want the real reason, I did run the games the first year. Oh, look at that. And then I burned out immediately. But that was the year Kevin died, and I was kind of lonely, and, you know, my social life had taken a big hit, and so I thought, I need to get involved and doing more stuff. And so that was, you know, it was good to get involved at the convention. That helped a lot.
Well, that's good. Do you want to talk a little about Kevin, or if you want to to help remember him?
Oh, yeah. We just, I was at a game convention last weekend in Stillwater, and we've been running the Kevin A. George Formula Day tournament there every year for 3 years.
Wow.
And Leon Major out there in Stillwater, he puts together little plaques and trophies for the first, second, and third place. So.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, we're just still doing a lot of stuff like that.
Well, that's good. I want to talk a little bit about last year's games. What were the kinds of things? First of all, I know the big thing was the first ever rock, paper, scissors tournament that we had at Conestoga. But there were some other gaming. What were some of the other games that were pretty popular last year? You don't remember.
I kind of like just people come and say they want to run a game, and I've never even heard of a lot of these things. I mean, I don't really keep up with what's popular. And, you know, the game room looked pretty full and seemed like most of it was occupied, but I don't know what was popular.
Well, I suppose we probably ought to tell our listeners what the role of the game chair is. What is their primary function for the convention, getting ready for the convention, and what do you actually do at the convention to help to enable the gaming to take place?
Most of what I do is, like, before the convention, people tell me what games they want to run and about when they want to run it, and I just kind of organize a schedule, and then I kind of over-organize all that and put together, you know, the schedule and publish that. And then at the convention, it just kind of runs all on its own.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I used to do gaming myself. And, yeah, they pretty much put you in a room and then you're off.
You know? Here's a table. And I never really hear a lot back afterward.
Get your bottle of Jolt or Mountain Dew and, you know, and sit there.
Yeah. It goes on all night. I mean, I left pretty early Friday night. And, you know, it goes on all night without any input from me at that point, thank God.
That's excellent. Let's see. What are some other questions? Okay, we may have to talk about dice, but not this early.
Oh, no, please.
Yes, we do have dice here. It is the stock and trade of most games, except for the card games and computer games. And if you play D&D or Starfleet Battles, you can certainly wax eloquent about the dice that you have. And
I've never been a real big dice fetish person. In fact, well, Roger especially, he likes games that have no dice. There are a lot of games where they have other kinds of ways of resolving things.
Now, generally for these gaming tournaments, a lot of times you'll get the game companies to help sponsor an event and award prizes. What were some of the game companies that sponsored last year?
Well, I know we had, Adam, I can't remember his last name offhand, ran some White Wolf games, and he was able to get them to send some really nice hardbook game manuals. I know that because they had to come through me. Usually, I just leave that up to the game masters. Like I usually like run one or two games myself, and then I let everybody else worry about their own thing.
Do you have any, what about, I mean, I know some of the other game companies in the past have been, what, Steve Jackson Games?
Yeah, they usually send some stuff. They have the Men in Black is sort of like their, the group of fans of their games that promote them, and Sarah is usually in charge of that. So I'm sure they'll be back this year.
Well, good. We heard, I've always been a big fan of their games.
Like, oh, yeah.
Car Wars, fun. Illuminati.
Oh, they got a lot of newer stuff.
Of course, there's
Che Geek and Che Goth, and those are real popular.
Well, it's probably telling my age is that how long it's been since I've played games. You know, it's probably been well over 10 or 15 years since I was a serious gamer. So.
Oh, no. You grew out of it then. Some of us never have, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot of fun at the time. So, and I might be able to be persuaded to sit back in a tournament.
Drop by.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there's an Illuminati tournament, I would certainly be interested in that. Or the Great Dalmudi.
Oh, well, we have that every year, of course.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday at noon.
Now, what is the appeal of the Great Dalmudi?
Well, it's a great game to have on Sunday because you're pretty tired. Nobody wants to think real hard. It's kind of silly. It's easy to pick up. There's a little bit of strategy to it, so it's not just, you know.
Then it involves wearing silly hats, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's the important part. Some people will play it without the hats. I don't know why. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me either. I can't even imagine that.
No. You
know, let's see. There's the Greater Peon and Lesser Peon. What are some of the other titles?
Well, the Greater Dalmudi and the Lesser Dalmudi.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole purpose of the game is to get the hat of the Greater Dalmudi to win the game.
Right.
And the game is inherently unfair, but sometimes you can turn it around.
Oh, yeah. You can have a greater revolution and the peons mm-hmm. become the Dalmudis.
Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful card game. If you've never played the Great Dalmudi, you should give it a shot. And there will be some opportunities.
Oh, we had two tables last year. I had Ben helping me with one mm-hmm. table, so I'm sure we'll have more this year.
Mm-hmm. Now, who are some of the people that you'd like to thank that have helped you over the past couple of years with running the games, besides the Game Masters?
Oh, the Game Masters are key, that's for certain. I mean, mm-hmm. basically, that's all it is just a room for the Game Masters to come in. You know, people who like the games and like to promote, you know, their favorite games. That's been a great help. And Lila's been a great help. She's been the game lackey for a couple of years now.
Well, that's good. Is that a title? Does she have a shirt that says, I'm the game lackey? Or?
I don't know. I think of the game Tsarinichka, but...
yeah, the Tsarina. Yeah, Tsarina. I can see that. Yeah, she certainly has the attitude. The other thing, I guess, is now there is other, in addition to playing board games and role-playing games, there's one that's been very popular for many, many years. I think it's even been around before Conestoga, even in Ocon days, was LARPing, which is live-action role-playing. Now, mostly, that's usually, I see them wandering the hallways with their arms crossed. I think that means they're invisible. They're playing, is it usually mostly vampire live-action role-playing, or is it other types of, or does it matter what scenarios they play?
I'm not real sure what they do either. I mean, I just sort of, you know, they want this space and these slots, but I know they do vampire. My nephew was in it a couple years ago, and... I know he had to deal with some werewolves. And
Well, they're always dressed kind of goth, so makes me think vampires. So.
It ought to be big this year.
Well, hopefully one of our listeners... Oops, I'm going to have to fix that.
Well, that's cool.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, the thing is if I keep it going, it'll lock the screen, and then I'll have to unlock it and to stop the tape. So, anyway, yeah, the screensaver shuts on, so it goes on after a while. One of the things you've done this year, last year you also had a form online for game masters to register if they wanted to run a game.
No,
right?
This is the first year.
This
I
is
had
the first
form,
year.
Yeah.
Okay. I think last year we just had a link to a webpage that they could contact you.
Yeah, I just had email. Wanted. Yeah, I did everything by email.
Yeah. So have you had anybody sign up for games now that you've had a form online?
I actually had two people like right away want to run Vampire LARPs, but we already have the LARP, you know, that Tim mm-hmm. is running. So I just sent them to him, and they can work with him. But I have had one guy already put in for D&D version 3 So we have one game so far.
Well,
it's pretty early.
Yeah. It is pretty early right now. Now, as of we're speaking, it's April the 3rd. It'll probably be a little closer to the convention, probably around May or maybe even early June before this is actually posted. So we don't want to like talk about what's going to happen, you know, next month.
Oh, yeah.
But we kind of talk in generalities. Do you know how many gamers you typically get for that you've been getting over the past couple of years?
It's like 50, 60.
That's a pretty good turnout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're a game room at a literary science fiction convention, so I'm not looking, you know, at game con numbers. But, the room's generally full of, happy-seeming people, so I'm happy with that.
Well, that's good. Well, you know, we give them a room to play, and they come and spend money, and we always appreciate that.
Yeah.
And we always hope that they have a good time, and if they don't, we would certainly like to hear why they didn't have a good time so that we could make it better for next year. And I think, this is a little early talking about the different kinds of games, that he has in mind, but, you know, role-playing games, strategic games, card games, and then there was the new, last year, was the Rock, Paper, Scissors tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And what was that all about?
I have no idea. It was, I came across this book called the Rock, Paper, Scissors Strategy Guide, and it just fascinated me. It's a wonderful book, and I read that, and I thought, oh, we have to have a tournament, and it was a big hit. We had about 20 people playing a tournament, and I'm not sure we'll do it again this year. That might have been one of those one-off deals, but we had a great time.
Yeah, well, you had some people specifically come to the convention for the Rock, Paper, Scissors tournament.
I heard that's a long way to go, just to fling your hands around. Some people take these things a little more seriously than others, so
that's
okay.
Yeah, I've been around gamers that just, you know, it's just a game.
Oh, you can't say that in front of some gamers or you'll start a fight, I'm afraid. It's a way of life for many of these people.
Oh, yeah. They're there with their dice and their miniatures.
Well, they put a lot of work in some of those
miniatures.
Some of the miniatures things, people spend hours and hours painting, especially like Warhammer and some of those games. It's just scary.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Mike, had an amazing collection of miniatures for Starfleet Battles. And he had, I don't know, probably close to 100, you know, different ships, and he had them all painted, and the shelves that he had them on collapsed. He was able to salvage most of them, but he was not a happy camper.
Oh, yeah. That's just too much work.
Yeah, and you know, there's other, you know, D&D, of course, is Dungeons & Dragons, which is the quintessential
I have a little of that. You
know, role-playing game, it was the first very popular one. I imagine there's probably some before that, but that was the one that made role-playing.
Oh, that was the big one, yeah. And it's still around. And we have the White Wolf. We have, like, the Troll Lords have their role-playing. I guess it's D&D related. There's, like, everybody kind of has their own brand of D&D anymore.
Well, I think probably the time I quit gaming was probably the time that more computer gaming became popular. And although I didn't become a computer gamer the way some, you know, with their PlayStations and their Nintendos and their Pong machines.
I remember that.
And the video games and all that. I don't know where I was going with this, but I will recover.
It's like we lost a generation of gamers there, because it's kind of funny. We don't really see people of a certain age bracket. We're getting more younger people now, like high school and college students. But it's like in between, like the 40, 50-year-olds and the college students, it's like they were all computer gamers.
Well, I remember when I first started gaming it was at the Tulsa Public Library. It was on Saturday morning. That's where I first met Roger Allen and Ben Hopkins and that group. They had a gaming all day long, and D&D was the most popular one.
Oh, yeah. We were doing that in college. I actually have role-played back in college, I confess. Although now I'm pretty much strictly board gaming.
Yeah, well, that's what I got interested in. Was mostly the more the board gaming. Sorry for the battles, Car Wars.
Oh, what's funny is you got the gamers seem like they're a tiny niche to everyone else. Well, the gamers have their own tiny niches. You know, there are people who strictly play, you know, these certain card games or these board games, and I mean it's kind of funny how niched everything is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I also quit also the time around when the card games really started becoming
the collectible card games?
The collectible card games.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't get into that.
No.
You know, I know some people love them.
Oh, yeah. Just, well, now they have, like, collectible miniatures games.
Oh, well, that might be interesting.
Yeah, there's, like, an Axis and Allies miniatures game where you buy a box and you might get a cool tank or...
Yeah, well, one of my biggest complaints about role-playing was, or rather, Dungeons & Dragons was the way when people created their characters and started playing them, they would get more and more powerful, and they would become essentially demigods, you know.
Oh,
you couldn't,
yeah.
Couldn't kill them. As a matter of fact, they kind of made fun of that in a South Park episode. But one game that I liked a lot, I only got to play it a little bit, was the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that I liked about it, it was self-limiting, because the more powerful your character became, and if you're familiar with the Cthulhu mythos, is the more insane they became. And at some point, you lost complete control of it, and the Game Master would get to take him over, because your character, you know, was knowing things that they weren't supposed to know, and they just went, you know,
bonkers. Oh, yeah,
bonkers.
You don't want to know too much.
Yeah. But that's what I liked about that game. So I know we plugged some other games here. What are some of the games that – you mentioned that you ran a couple of games. What are some of the games that you ran and plan on running again this year?
Oh, I'm not sure what I'm planning this year. Last year I got Thad to run Seven Ages because that's my current favorite game. Mm-hmm. It's from the Australia Design Group. That was fun. I also ran a game I wrote called Unbreakable. It's great to bring it to the con, and you know I have a set of guinea pigs there to try out a new game on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I forgot about that. Yes, you are. You have designed a number of games. What are Unbreakable? How many other games do you have to your credit?
Oh, maybe half a dozen. There's Interspace, a space game, and I've got a Risk variant. I've run that at the con before. So you know that's fun to bring that around. I usually get a few people to try it out with me.
Well, that's good. What are some of the basics of Unbreakable? Is it does it have anything to do with the movie?
Oh no! It's basically Weapons of Steel, Planet of Tissue is a theme.
Ah, okay.
You can't actually hurt anybody's units, but you can like nuke craters in the earth and bury them in you know lava pits. So it's kind of crazy.
That sounds like fun. Now, Greg.
Yes.
I think we've covered as much as we can about gaming, unless we want to talk about dice, and I don't think we're going to.
Oh, please.
So I think what we'll do is we'll shift gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about the play.
Ah.
Now, you have been involved with the Ping An Playhouse Players for God knows how many years. How many years is that?
25
years. Well, this obviously predates... Conestoga, which is now in its going to be in its 11th year.
We go to 11 now.
Yes, we go. Ours goes to 11.
That's right.
OCON, which was our predecessor, and a fair number of people that worked on OCON now work on Conestoga. So there is a little bit of continuity there, especially you know Randy and Roger.
Oh, yeah.
and of course you. What year did they start doing the plays? Was it pretty early on, or was it when they all moved to the Camelot?
The first play is credited at like a Starbase Tulsa meeting. Starbase Tulsa was the, the science fiction club here in town in the late 70s.
Early 80s, yeah.
Early 80s, and so that's kind of the Christmas party at us in 1980, I think, at Starbase Tulsa was the first... play, and then we repeated that at one of the OCONs, and that was based on the second Star Wars movie.
Yeah, matter of fact, there is a website. Now, what is that website address?
PenguinPlayhouse.org.
And I will be sure to put there is a link on the Conestoga website.
Yeah.
But I will make sure and put it in the show notes. And there are lots of pictures from previous years, and you can see all the listings for all the plays and where they performed. And if you've never seen a Penguin Playhouse play, you have... I wouldn't say that your life would be poorer for it, but your life would be poorer for it.
Oh, yeah. And you have to be there. It's like the, you know, the Buddhist mandala, you know, sand mandala. You have you have to be there. It's I've seen the tapes, you know, the tapes are okay, but
yeah,
it's kind of an experiential thing.
It's not quite the same. I just remember one year it was at the Camelot, and some prop guy brought out a chair, and he got a standing
ovation.
Oh, my
Lord, yes. The chair guy.
Yeah, the chair guy. Well, I found out who that was years later.
Oh, yeah?
I don't remember what his real name was, but he's in an organization called the SCA. He goes by the name of Ian. That might be his real name, too. As a matter of fact, he brought out another prop the second year, and they gave him another round of applause.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen. Ocon had, we would fill up that huge ballroom there at the Camelot.
Oh, yeah, I definitely remember that. I'd wander in and out, and but the ones I've seen, I've always enjoyed the play.
Oh, well, good, thank you.
And of course, the mastermind behind that, who I tried to get an interview last year with, Roger Allen, he's... I don't know. I want to say shy.
You were trying to get us to do a play on the podcast.
I was trying to get
come up with anything.
A short skit, even 2 or 3 minutes, just to give people a taste of what to expect. Of course, that might have driven them off. I don't know.
Yeah, we were racking our brains trying to come up with an idea.
Now, last year, Night of the Space Opera was a celebration of not just, well, the 50th anniversary of Forbidden Planet, but a lot of science fiction films. And of course, if people are familiar with Forbidden Planet, Greg played one of the lead roles, and
Professor Morbius.
Professor Morbius, and he did a bang up job.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. I think there were some other roles in previous plays. You had to paint yourself blue.
Oh, yeah, I'm always the guy who ends up wearing a lot of makeup. I played Worf in all the Star Trek ones.
Yes, I remember the forehead.
Yeah, I get to put on makeup. I don't do the makeup so much anymore. It's a pain in the butt.
Well, there was the X-Men. What was the character that you played?
Pub Crawler,
yes.
The blue, the German guy.
Yeah, they always give different funky names to the... I'm going to...
Oh, the X-Men and
the X-Men.
Star Trek, Star
the titles.
Wars.
I mean, they've made fun of everything. X-Men, Star Wars, Babylon 5.
But if you're doing something that's 50 years old, though, we stuck with the original names when we did Planet of the Apes and Forbidden Planet, because nobody's going to remember.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Roger did a great job as Robbie.
Robbie. Oh, yes. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I don't know where he found that plastic bag to put over his head.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm just always amazed at some of the stuff, some of the props Roger comes up with. Randy, the props they make. Kevin used to make great props. Mm-hmm. It was scary.
I think one of my favorite characters was the Yoda character that Randy.
Oh yeah, with the sock puppet.
The sock puppet Yoda. That was as soon as he whipped it out, it was got a great peel
the
of laughter.
The best was when Randy played Luke and Yoda, and he was talking to his own hand. That was fabulous. I think that was the first play we did at Conestoga was the Star Wars trilogy. We did all three.
Well, we'll have to look it up, yeah.
Oh, well, we can always look it up.
Now the thing is, generally, Roger, everyone gives him ideas. Some of them he uses, some of them he doesn't. And he's always, like, writing the play up until the last minute, isn't he? And sometimes he's even changing it while it's actually in progress.
Oh, the play was underway at one point. And Roger, we were backstage, and Roger suddenly realized he had not cast a particular part yet. So he ran out in the hall and grabbed somebody and asked if they wanted to be in the play. It was a small part, a guard or something. But after the play had already started, he was putting people in it. That was a good moment.
Yes, we may have to. I'll try to see if I can twist Roger's arm so that we can. maybe get him in a podcast. And I think what would be fun is if he actually has a script and they didn't burn them, is to maybe have a short scene out of a play.
Oh, yeah, we have a lot of the scripts that are still around. I've kept a lot of them. I think he's got a lot of them.
Well, that's good. And the thing is I've got plenty of audio equipment, so we can always make our own special effects.
He always puts together great little special effects.
Well, sound effects.
Yeah, sound effects with the ray guns and the cats.
Well, the Conestoga play, or not the, well, the Penguin Playhouse play is one of the most well-attended and most looked forward to events at the convention. I think initially the whole play thing started off as we had a masquerade where people dress up in these amazing costumes and parade across the stage. And while they went, then when they were done, the judges would go off some room to judge, who was the best. And so in the interlude, what they needed to do was to entertain the crowd. And then that's how the play was born.
Well, yeah, we started out with folk singers and...
And eventually what happened, my understanding, is basically, well, the play became the thing, the masquerade was incidental.
Yeah, the masquerades haven't been what they were, back in the 80s. They were We had some amazing costumes back then.
You know, I have seen some of these nice costumes recently, but I went to my first WorldCon in 2005.
Oh, yeah.
And so I saw a Masquerade, and my, it was impressive.
Oh, yeah. Those people spend all year working on the costume for the WorldCon.
The funniest thing we saw was, it was not an entry. There's a, I think it's called JAFA, which is some kind of young fan association, and they took a bunch of the kids, and they made these... I guess they had a scrap pile, and they made all these impromptu costumes, and it was from the movie Shaun of the Dead, which is the zombie movie.
Of course.
So they had all these kids, and they had them lined up by size. So they started out from the shortest to the tallest, and they had all these zombies just kind of parade across the stage to the music from Shaun of the Dead, and that was the funniest thing I'd seen.
That would be good. Zombies. Well, I guess I like the Holocaust costume. Plan this year, and I guess we had pirates last year, and this year we'll be pirates,
The reason we did pirates last year was because of our artist guest of honor, Don Mates.
Okay. Yes,
our artist guest last year, the reason why we had pirate costumes last year was because our artist guest of honor was Don Mates, and Don Mates was the artist that created the Captain Morgan for Captain Morgan Rum. And
and the pirate movie came out last year.
Yes, and the pirate movie came out last year. And he also has a pirate calendar, which I happen to own a copy of. I'll show it to you later if you want to see it. It's really cool. And, of course, this year our guest of honor is going to be Laurel K. Hamilton. So I'm sure the LARPers will love that so that they can play, you know, their vampire role-playing games. So I imagine this year our theme, Hall Costumes, is probably going to be, some people will dress up as vampires. But also there was something else. I believe it's called... They use the term cosplay, and I guess every in-group likes to use their own terminology, and I looked it up, and it just means it's costume in play, and it just means it's just a fancy name for hall costumes.
But those people, they work really hard to look like a character from anime. It's not like you're like, I'm a generic, you know, pirate or anime person. They actually have a specific character.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's cosplay or cosplay or whatever, but, you know, Wikipedia is a wonderful resource, and you can look up and find out more than you ever wanted to know about it. But I'm interested to see, and these people, if you haven't seen these costumes, from what I understand, they're supposed to be pretty interesting, pretty amazing, and they love to have their picture taken. So bring your cameras. They emphasize that very heavily. I'll be interested to see some of those costumes.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. A lot of hall costumes make the convention a lot of fun. I've really missed that lately. So I'm hoping that it sounds like the younger generation is getting excited about costume again. That'll be fun.
Yes, I remember one convention I went to in Oklahoma City, and it was a Star Trek convention. So there were a lot of Klingons running around with the foreheads. And I saw one of them, and... he didn't make me think Klingon when I first saw him. My first thought was Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
He had a black and white outfit. You know, he had the forehead, but...
Yeah, some of those, they just kind of slap on something on their head, and it's like, okay, I'm a Klingon. I did see someone do an Andorian Klingon cross, and that was fantastic. He had the blue skin with a lumpy forehead and long white hair.
Where did you see this at?
At WarpCon in Oklahoma City years ago.
Wow.
It was amazing. That was cool.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen something like that.
Oh, yeah, so. That was great.
Well, we've talked a little bit about gaming. We've talked about the play is a thing. And then we've talked about the hall costumes and what we have planned. I threatened Greg, if we ran out of things to talk about, was to talk about dice. And the only reason why I did that, because I used to be a gamer, and if you're a gamer that plays dice games, you get a collection after a while, and there's all different sizes and shapes and different sides. I think that's all I'm going to say about the subject, unless you have anything to add.
I want the depleted uranium dice.
What's so special about them?
Density.
Density, okay. Well, Greg, I want to thank you for being on the Conestoga podcast, and I look forward to, I'm sure we'll have more information forthcoming as to what games will be available as it gets closer.
Keep watching the website. I'll post stuff when we get a few more games. Well, by the time this airs, hopefully there'll be some games online there.
Well, thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Chris.
Sure. Well, Greg has his work cut out for him for both gaming and the play. Here's to smooth gaming, Greg. Here are just some of the games that you can join in on at Conestoga this year. However, if you want to see the full list, you can see them on the gaming page on our website. Now, I won't be listing times. Let me go ahead and read to you from the webpage here. Game program. We're trying something new this year, a program booklet for the game room. The booklet will contain the game schedule as well as data for each event. Be sure to pick up the official version at the con. If you have any questions, of course, contact Greg Turner, the game czar. Now, here are just some of the confirmed games at Conestoga 11 this year. Battle Lore, Car Wars, The Great Dalmudi, several versions of GURPS, Space Hulk, Steve Jackson Card Games, Twilight Theater LARP, which is stands for Live Action Role Playing, Victory 2 with a K, and Wings of War. There are many, many more games listed. One of the things I'd like to highlight are the people who make the convention happen. Without the hard work and dedication of the fans, you would not be able to meet your favorite authors and artists. They are the unsung heroes who work on your behalf. So if you see someone doing a good job as a volunteer, please thank them. Now, I will be recording a number of interviews at the convention in front of a live audience. I'll have an updated schedule posted on the podcasting room door, and copies will be available near or at registration. So drop on in, but please be quiet when leaving and entering the room. However, if you are having too much fun with other activities, you can always listen to the podcast later. So thanks for listening until our next Conestoga podcast. For more information, our web address is www.sftulsa.org or send an email to conestoga@sftulsa.org. Questions about our podcast may be sent to podcast@sftulsa.org. Please send us an email or put a comment on the website and let us know what you thought of this podcast.